2 Corinthians chapter 3. And let's start in verse 1. We'll read the first six verses. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 1. Do we begin again to commend ourselves, or need we, as some others, epistles of commendation to you, or letters of commendation from you? Ye are our epistle, written in our hearts, known and read of all men. Forasmuch as ye are manifestly declared to be the epistle of Christ, ministered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not in tables of stone, but in fleshy tables of the heart. And such trust we have through Christ to Godward, not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God, who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit, for the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. Let's ask the Lord to help. Father, the word, your word has so many things, and it's wonderful to sit and study and prepare and to organize what you've given me. And so now, Father, I just ask you to help me deliver it. And really, it's I have to do a good job, and so those that are hearing can receive it, Father. And so I ask that you help me do that. Set me aside, and you know, of course, what everyone needs. And so we ask you to bless again this evening, for Jesus' sake. Amen. So the subject tonight is an able minister, an able minister. And we're going to be working in all of chapter 3 and all of chapter 4, but we're not going to read it all. But if you have just a few moments briefly, you can skim it real quickly, just familiarize yourself with it, and then as we go through and need to, we'll go ahead and read the verses. So, you know, if you catch me going on a rabbit trail, you just go ahead and go ahead and forward and look a little bit or something like that. You say, well, what's a rabbit trail? Well, that's kind of, let's see, something like the other night I talked about the sludge in the sewer system. That's kind of like a rabbit trail, you know. So if I start telling a story like that, you just quick look forward and make sure you know where we're going. So it's not that hard. A minister, what is a minister? A minister is someone who ministers, okay? It doesn't need to be something more difficult. It's someone that does the action of ministering, okay? And then we see several forms of this word in these chapters here. Ministered, minister, ministration, all the same idea. And what we should remember as New Testament Christians is that anyone is a minister. Okay, anyone can be a minister and should be a minister, any Christian. It's not the clergy and the laity that you might find in some other place. For example, the Roman Catholic Church has a whole structure like that in some of the other old-time denominations. There's a structure of clergy and laity. And, of course, they get that from the Old Testament when there was a priest class. And so, but in the New Testament, we understand that all Christians are priests. So that idea of a priestly class is completely, we can say absolutely outdated if you're a New Testament Christian. And if you're going to practice that, it's really anti-biblical. Okay. So that is to say that Reverend Stevens is not the only minister in this church. Now, he's glaring at me now because... because he doesn't like that. No, he's not glaring. I don't think Brother Stevens ever glares. I don't think I've ever seen him glare. I lived with him. I don't recall him ever glaring. But a pastor is a minister, of course. And a deacon is a minister. And a Sunday school teacher is a minister. And a nursery worker is a minister. And if you do the cleaning in the church or some maintenance in the church, you're a minister. Those are people that minister in the church. In fact, every Christian should be a minister, and it can take place Your ministry can take place in every place and every opportunity that you have, and you should look for those opportunities. So, well, that was point one. That was easy. What is a minister? Okay. But I wrote that as my introduction, so I don't know why I did that. So that's supposed to be point one. Let me fix that. Okay. You guys have got me messed up already. This whole system is just too hard to deal with. I don't know. Well, we'll just keep going. That's all right. It doesn't matter. I can scratch and readjust it. It doesn't matter. I don't type my sermons. It doesn't matter. So we should strive. If we're going to be an able minister and a minister of the New Testament, we should strive to meet God's standards of what a minister is, right? Okay, so we understand what a minister is. So let's talk about that a little bit. What do we minister? Okay. Well, in verse 2, it says, ye are our epistle written in our hearts, known and read of all men. We are ministers of what is already written in our hearts. What is already written in our hearts. He says, ye are our epistle, writ in our hearts. And it's not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. And so it's not just merely a head knowledge that I might study in a book and then perhaps make some notes about. But it's what I've studied and that I have learned and I have made part of me. And I haven't been able to do that if I've attempted to write it in tables of stone or if I've expected God to write it in the tables of stone. You follow what I'm saying? But it says in fleshy tables of the heart, the end of verse 3. Now, of course, that's not flesh as contrasted to spirit like we were working on the other night, but contrasted to stone. And he wants our hearts to be soft as opposed to rock-hard stone. And if we're going to allow God to write in our hearts, they have to be soft. And I won't say that God won't attempt to write on your heart if it's stone, but that's going to be a more difficult process because he's going to have to pull out maybe a steel, some kind of steel pen or something like that, or chip into it with a piece of metal and hammer. And so I think I'd prefer it if it's a little easier process. So let's work with give him fleshly tables to work with rather than tables of stone. And we minister the New Testament. We minister the New Testament. This is the church age, the time of the New Testament. It's not that we don't use the Old Testament, but the Old Testament could only go so far. And in verse 6, it says, we minister the New Testament because the Old Testament was merely the letter which killeth, but now the Spirit can give life. So we are ministers of the New Testament. Who is the mediator of the New Testament? Of course, that's Jesus Christ. So we are actually ministering Jesus Christ. And so that's what Paul refers to in verse 3. He says, the epistle of Christ, ministered by us. We're now ministering Jesus Christ. In verse 9, he compares the two like this. He says, for if the ministration of condemnation be glory, much more doth the ministration of righteousness exceed in glory. So he's contrasting the two. In the past, it was a ministry of condemnation, but now it's a ministration of righteousness. And you say, well, those two words don't actually sound opposite. I mean, righteousness, isn't that kind of a condemning and condemnation? Well, Paul is placing them as opposing, so they're opposite. His intent is for you to understand them as opposite ends of something, or at least quite different. If you think about the Old Testament, you probably can easily think about, you know, the Ten Commandments. Even if you're not a Bible student, even if you're not a Christian, you can probably remember some of the Ten Commandments. And you probably remember that most of the Old Testament Ten Commandments there in Exodus chapter 20 start with, thou shalt not, right? Thou shalt not, okay? For example, the second one, if we were going to follow on what I preached last time, it says, thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven image, right? Now, that's something of condemning those that produce images, but for us, though, it doesn't necessarily tell us a whole lot about how to not have images, okay, or how to stay away from images. Although there is, you know, there's plenty of that in the Old Testament, but there's quite a bit of condemnation as compared to what we can learn in the New Testament, or if we use the New Testament to go back and study the Old Testament, which is really what we do quite a bit. It's quite profitable. But that commandment there says it like this: thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven image. And that's the problem right there for us, because that's a commandment to you alone, unto thyself. That's you by yourself. But for us in the New Testament, we're not exactly alone like the people in the Old Testament were, because we have Christ inside of us, right? We've been born again, and he resides inside of us, okay? So he's willing to help me keep from images, and we did a whole lesson on that last night, and in fact, he's even willing to walk with me through the recesses of my mind and take a look at what's there and what's not supposed to be there. And he'll walk with me if I'm willing to go through and then name them as he helps me point them out. You know, if he points them out and then I'm not willing to name it, then I don't know if he's going to keep walking with me. That might be a little different than he intends. But he'll help us. Okay, he'll help us, and they didn't have that kind of help in the Old Testament. And that's something that we as ministers of the New Testament should take advantage all the time. Now, there's different types of ministering, right? There might be what you could call crisis ministering, and that's going to be more often than not something that the pastor does. There might be a ministry of encouragement, and any Christian can do that, and all Christians should try to do that. There might be a ministry of character building, and that's often with our children, and that's why we force them to practice perhaps their instrument when they don't want to practice, or to do their schoolwork when they don't want to sit and do their schoolwork. That's partly is building character, and we require them to do their chores not just haphazardly and quickly. To say it's done, but thoroughly, right? And so, if I ask my son who's here, what is clean? And he should say, it's not clean until it's super clean. That's what we teach our children about doing things thoroughly. It's not clean until it's super clean. And so, and that's not just cleaner than it was before, right? Because if it's it's going to be cleaner than it was before, because probably it's been a long time since you clean it, and you just wipe a rag over it one time, it's going to be way cleaner than it was before, right? We teach our kids to do things thoroughly, and that's a ministry of character building. Paul makes it plain that we also minister to the lost. Okay, he says, we shine a light in their darkness, which already shines in our hearts, right? He says that down in chapter 4 and verse 6. And if that light's going to shine in the darkness, it needs to be shining in us daily if we're going to give them any kind of a glimpse of the light, which is the knowledge of the glory of God. It doesn't work to say, I'm going to switch it on at a certain time and so I can minister and then I can switch it back off later. You think it might work, but it doesn't work. It's a light that builds and glows and continues. And if you decide you're going to turn it off, you might not be able to just get it back on just that fast, right when you want to. We want to work on having it on and keeping it on. It's one of those lights that lasts forever. It's a super-duper LED light that will never burn out. Once you get that thing cranked into the socket, just turn it on and just keep it on. Don't let it go out. And we should work on that. So, yeah, let's work on that. That's number two. What is an able minister? What is an able minister? Now, the word able, of course, comes from the word ability, right? And it means to have physical or mental power to do something. Power to do something. To function at a certain level of skill or proficiency, which produces a recognizable result. That means if you're able and you have an ability, when you do something and apply your abilities or your skills, something comes of that, and there's a result. And so we want to minister righteousness that produces righteousness, right? Righteousness can be produced, and it's also a product. That it's a product of God's nature. He's just righteous who he is. And if we minister righteousness, we minister him, and we'll be able to see an increase of that or a reproduction of that, and we call that fruit as well. That's what we want to be doing if we're able ministers. That's the ability that we want. So who will we minister righteousness to, or where is it going to start? Well, it starts with acquiring something of God's nature, right? And so we have to first let him write in our hearts. And then we exercise that, use it, and build upon it. And then when we put it to work, there's a recognizable result that we see and that others will see. Now, when you talk about a result of applying a skill, it will be a combination of a couple factors. Okay, if you're talking about just defining it, it'd be a combination of for example, you're talking about strength, raw power, strength sport, raw power, and then you would add in the knowledge of the mechanical skill. And you'd put those two together, and you'd get a recognizable result. And so if you're talking about knowledge, it'd be the same thing. Not just the knowledge that's written and I've studied, but then I use it in a way that I have learned that works. I've learned for myself that a way that produces a recognizable result. And I'll use it in that way, and then it'd be repeatable. So just by way of illustration, there's something I want to drive home here. So I weight trained on and off all my life. Started in junior high school. That was a long time ago. Got myself a set of plastic-covered cement weights. And maybe some of you saw those, or maybe you still have a set somewhere down in the basement, you know. I got me some of those when I was in junior high school, and I started lifting then. And back then there was really no information about. I think we learned something in gym class. I think they gave us about my gym teacher gave us about a week of it or something. I hardly remember, but the thing is, little guys have to try harder. Okay, so I'm just gonna be straight up. Little guys like me have to try harder. So I started lifting weights, you know, because I liked playing hockey since grade school, and I played in the Pee Wee Leagues. It was called the Pee Wees back then. And so I sought a secret advantage by lifting weights. Okay, what are you talking about? What's that going to be? Well, if you're wearing a hockey equipment and stuff and a jersey and all the pads and stuff, you can't really tell, you know, what the guy's got underneath. It's mostly about general size, but The bigger guys would always look upon a little guy like me, and they'd always tack on the word little and weak. Okay, that's just, it's just, you're going to assume that. Okay, so my secret weapon would be little but not so weak. Okay, that was my goal. And so if a guy was, a foot taller than me or a head taller than me, you know what that means. If I get into the right position, I can use my ability to slam him. It was great. I loved it. That's a great sport. It's because if he's a foot taller than me, that puts his ribs right at my shoulder height. You know, so that works really good. That the physics is really good with that. Okay, and so I look back on my career in Pee Wee hockey and junior high hockey, and I recall some really nice checks where I flattened some guys, and that's because I had that secret weapon. And of course. But that height difference also produces another problem, and that's like my head would be like about the same height as his elbow, or it's real easy. So, you know, so there's positive and negatives. You know, I won't say that being short is really the best, okay? I'm not going to say that. So what I'm trying to say is it's something you got to work at. If you want some abilities, you're going to have to put some time and effort to it. And I started weightlifting when I was young, and I weightlifted on and off, my whole life. Sometimes it's for sports, sometimes to stay healthy, sometimes because I just like it. And you develop ability over time, okay? It's cumulative, like we talked about the other night. It's a maturity on top of maturity, or skill on top of a skill, or strength on top of strength. You know, so as far as weightlifting goes, I got to high school and worked out in this little hole-in-the-wall gym that the school had. Wasn't very much in there. They didn't even have a squat rack. You know, they just had a universal gym and a leg press on there and a bench press rack along the side. And so I did all that stuff, but I couldn't do any squatting, which ends up meaning as far as training goes, I have a weak link, and that is, you know, my back's not going to be as strong, and the glutes aren't going to be as strong. That's on the back end, right? And actually, it's called the whole back end. It's called the posterior chain, and if you don't squat, and it's just going to be a weak length, and it was for me. But then, you know, I got to college. I started up again. They had a big weight room there, and they had racks and stuff, squat racks. So I started squatting again, and within less than 9 months, I got up to like over 300 pounds, you know. And, you know, that at that time in my life, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, I'm relying on an enthusiasm, okay, rather than good training principles. And so I got up to that kind of weight by relying on enthusiasm and what's called a weight belt. And that's like it takes place of some strength that you should have, but you don't. So you wear that. And the result is I produced some even bigger flaws in my system, you know, because I left some weak links there that I just ignored them and just kept pushing forward and just, you know, I thought it was growing and getting stronger, and I was in a way, but there were some weak things developing, and they were staying there. You follow what I'm saying? Okay. And then at one point, I hurt my back moving a washing machine. You know, this has nothing to do with weightlifting. I was just moving a washing machine and carrying it down the stairs, and that's just bad, okay? And I never got it rehabbed correctly, okay? The physical therapist people that were attached to the school there, they didn't know anything except throw you in the whirlpool and sit there for 15 minutes, you know. They never gave me any, you know, exercises to make up for my weak points or anything like that. And so I never got my back rehabbed correctly after that. You know, it settled down, of course, and I went back to normal activities and even started doing weightlifting again over the years. And even squatting some when I had a chance, but I never fixed that issue or those issues that I had. And I got to China, and when we had room, you know, would get some weights and start weight training again, and even do some squatting, and so at this point, I'm like working with squatting 100 pounds, okay. And you know, compared to what I did as a in college, it's not very much. And I so I was at 100, and eventually got up to back up to like say 125 pounds. You know, squatting 125 pounds. That's not really quite even my body weight at the time. And I started deadlifting. I started learning some more, and there was more information available. You know, reading around on the net and stuff like that. And I started deadlifting, and I got deadlifted up to about 150 pounds, okay? And then the whole progress stalled, okay? I just couldn't make either one of those go up anymore. And my point is, what I want you to understand is at some point in your growth and in the progression of your abilities, that is your spiritual abilities and your character as a Christian, you're going to hit a stall point, okay? And maybe it's not necessarily a stall point that you feel as stalled, but from this point on, to go farther and to grow more is going to be harder, okay? Because what God is going to do is expose some deep flaws that you probably have and that perhaps you've never dealt with. And maybe you didn't even know they were there. But as you work for the Lord, they're going to be exposed. As you're challenged for the Lord, they'll be exposed. You say, well, I mean, you could squat 125 and deadlift 150. Well, why keep going? I mean, that's not so bad. Not really. Those kinds of weights would be considered novice level if you're actually, you know, talking about the sphere of strength training. And I wanted to keep going up. And if you stop at the place where you are at a certain level of maturity that seems to be adequate for the things that you do in your daily life, in your Christian life, what I want to tell you is that you can go farther, for one, and maybe you just aren't as mature as you think, or as mature as God wants you to be. You can do more than that. We're talking about, you know, those numbers I gave you is really just like body weight, you know, like my body weight, approximately my body weight. And what that pictures is a Christian who can just pretty much take care of himself, you know, pretty much for he can do the right things for himself and so on. But we want to be ministers of more than just, I mean, take care of ourselves, right? We want to minister not just to take care of ourselves, but, well, I should say we want to actually minister, which means serving others, okay? And we'll hit that word in a little bit. And if you someday hope to do any kind of more difficult ministering, like some type of crisis ministering or help somebody that's got more difficult problems, then your strength level is just going to have to be a little higher, and your ability is going to have to be a little more higher, And so, there's those kinds of ministries, and if you want to be able to do that, then you'll have to work through a time when God is going to work on you, and it's not going to be as easy as it was before, you know, and it hits you like when you've been saved for like 10 or 15 years. And then the Lord says, okay, you're ready now? Let's really get at it. You see, I wasn't working before. Yeah, you were. Yeah, we've been working before 10, 15 years. If you got this far, you've been working. But now we're going to work on something a little bit deeper. And when you come out of that, you'll be even stronger. And then so when, you know, some woman, somebody calls you on the phone and says, my wife and I are, or my husband and I are headed to the divorce bureau. And in China, that's just like a big hall. We don't have a divorce bureau here, do we? But in China, it's a big hall, and when you go in there, the one's about this big. And the one side is where they do the marriages, and the other side is where they do divorces. Okay, it's like that. So what are you going to do when she calls you on the phone? You know, do you have what it takes to, do you have something inside of you that you can take 3 minutes on the phone or 5 minutes on the phone and tell her to put it on the speakerphone and let me talk to your husband and have him come over to your house? You ready for it? Or when they're at your house, And they're sitting in a couple chairs, you know, about less than 3 feet apart, and they start yelling at each other. You're going to have some ammunition. You're going to have some abilities to try and intercede in that couple's and make some inroads into what that Satan has done in their marriage. You're going to have some strength in yourself. Not just the strength that can take care of your own self, but that you can do something for them as well. So, I got to this point, and I think I was like, at this point, I'm like 50 or something like that. 48. And I said, this isn't working. I'm stuck. And I don't want to be stuck at this level. I want to keep going. He said, you're just trying to regain your former glory. That's all you want. No. Like I said, to do body weight is just normal, healthy level of strength. It's just normal. It's not anything impressive. And so I wanted to get that and for that to be easy. And I knew I had, even though I'd been reading and so on and had things to study or I had information, there's just some stuff I must not have known. Otherwise, I should have been able to go farther. So I finally broke down. I spent some money on a coach that I found online. And he had been a former Big Ten strength coach and got out, was doing his own coaching now on his own. And so he wasn't too expensive. And but he knew what he was doing. Okay, he had the experience, and he had gone there himself. He had been made a world record when he was 18 or something. A smart guy, and so I had been exposed to everything that he started to teach me, but I just didn't know how to apply it. Okay, and over a period of 6 months, he fixed all my flaws. Okay. Got him up to 80% or so, and so I got squat was back up to 150, and I got up to like 200 on my deadlift, and so on. And but it wasn't easy at all. Okay. Now, in fact, it was quite painful at times. Now, this isn't really about exercise, okay? I think you should exercise, but what I'm trying to get at is that at that point, if I was going to go forward, there had to be some pain. Okay, and if I was just going to ignore it and say no, then I would have never got past that point. And sometimes I would look at the exercise prescription and the set, the weights and the sets that he had given me for that week, and it's like, oh, I don't think I want to do it because last week was hard enough, and this seems even worse. And sometimes I do what he told me, and I would get these like throbbing pains in my back. And I'd write him and I'd tell him about this, and he said, boy, I never heard that before. But we talked about it, and he said, you don't have any like problems with your spine. You don't have any disc, bulging or anything like that. And I've trained older guys like you, and we can just keep going. Okay, just take it easy, take it slow, and keep in touch. And so he'd give me a workout for the week, and I'd go through that, and I'd be hitting the last couple sets, and my back is starting to say, oh, you can't do this. And so, but he said I could, so okay, I'll just do it and see what happens, and for some reason I was able to do it, and I was surprised because it hurt more than it ever hurt before. And before, I would just quit and say, I'm stuck, okay? But he fixed up my flaws, for one, and so I could keep going. He fixed up some of those deeper issues so I could go past that spot, okay? So God will eventually require that of us. He's gonna expose those flaws, expose those things that have been left alone for a long time. I can describe it for you a little bit, and I think it would be helpful. So your muscle is supposed to be, it's got a lot of blood flow and stuff like that, and when it works, it contracts and then it expands when it relaxes, and so on. And so, and the working muscle also builds up waste material, and it has to be flushed out. And there's also a kind of micro tearing that takes place. So it's called like damage. It's a kind of damage, and it has to be repaired. And this is a process that goes on every time you exercise, and you know, it goes on for years. Okay, and so what the result is when you get old, is the fibers of muscle, they start to, because of the scar tissue, they start to like stick together. Okay, so if like you're old, someone can stick their thumb in their, you know, the back of your neck, and they'll find these cords. Okay, and are in your back between your shoulder blades, you get to find the bumps and stuff like that. Or if you like stick it in your legs somewhere, you'll find these big lumps, things like that. And when you were young, it wasn't like that. Do that to your kids. Just poke around on your kid. You won't find anything like that in a little kid. Okay? And that's just from being old, and it loses its circulation. You follow what I'm saying? There's nothing going through there and cleaning it out. It's just been left for too long of a time. And we get that way in our Christian life. You go along, and everything seems to, I mean, because the muscle still works. I mean, it still it contracts and relaxes. You do all the stuff. It still works. So we can ignore it. And that's how we get in our Christian life. You just go along, and we read, and we do the stuff we like to do, and we do the stuff we can do. But some of that micro scarring is building up, and it's starting to clump together even more and more. And the result is, eventually, when you decide to deal with it, it's going to hurt even more. So if you go to a massage therapist, it won't be for relaxation. Okay, it won't be for relaxation. it'll be for therapy, and it won't feel good either. Or if you try to do what I'm talking about here, you're going to go through a period of pain where the muscles is forced to work like it's not used to working, and so on. So I want to be able, as a Christian, to take care of more than just myself. You know, so I don't even, you know, I hit 150 and then 200 dev. I'll keep going if my joints would allow, and I hope they'll allow. I'll keep going. And say, why do I want to go more? Because if I can, I will. Right? If I can, I will. If I can, I won't. I'm going to do what I can. I want to be able to do more. And I hope there is men and women in this church, and young men and young women in this church, that want to do more and want to have more abilities and want to grow more in the Lord. And next year they can do more than they could do this year. And if the Lord gives you more responsibilities and more difficult ways, opportunities to minister, that you'll have the ability to do that. And you know, stay in the Word, and that's where it's at. But sometimes you might not know how to apply it. And so it might be helpful for you to ask and sit under somebody and learn from somebody that's learned quite a bit more. And that's what the pastor does. And in fact, you don't necessarily have to wait until he finds that it's, you know, maybe necessary to point something out to you. You might say that you might go and take some time and find me. So I've hit a spot. I've hit a spot, and I'm kind of stalled. What should I do? And you can tell him what's going on, and he probably could tell you what to do. Make use of that. An able minister needs to know who he's serving. In chapter 4 and verse 5, it says, "We preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus the Lord, and ourselves your servants for Jesus Christ." Okay? We are servants. Ministering is servants. We are servants for Jesus' sake. In a little bit earlier, the verse just above there, it says, of the lost, they are blinded, their minds are blinded. We are hope that we might minister to the lost. And what we need to understand about them is that they are blinded. Okay, that is, not only are they starting at zero, okay, But on top of that zero, they've got a blindfold. Okay, so it's not just that they don't know anything, but they're actually prevented from knowing. Okay, it's a process that someone may have blinded them, although everyone is responsible to a certain degree for their state, and a lost man is responsible for his state. But maybe he's been part of an institution, perhaps a religious institution, or that has created some kind of blindfold on top of the fact that he knows nothing. And so when we minister to this type of person, we have to keep that in mind, where they're at. Sometimes we forget that. Sometimes, Brother Jeremy worked on this a little bit this morning. For example, if you were to find out some man some prisoner was in a dungeon, and you could find out where the dungeon is, and you go there, and it's basically just been closed up, and he's been existing in this darkness for a long, long time, and you have an opportunity to open that door and let the sun shine in, and you know, when that light hits his eyes, he may very well be yelling at you to close the door, right? You would think, well, man, this is what you need, don't you know it? But for him, he's not even ready for it because he's been in the darkness, he's been blinded for so long, blindfolded for so long, that even just a small amount of light is going to cause a reaction in his being that is, not what it's rejecting. He's not what we would want at all. He might yell at you to shut the door. And so maybe the best you can do the first time you go there is just leave the door open just a little crack, right? And go in and maybe sit with him for a little while and just make friends the first time. Maybe that's all you can do. And then and you leave, and perhaps he's going to get up and close the door again and be just back like in the darkness he was before. And so maybe you have to go back again, and he'll let you open the door a little bit. A little crack, and you talk with him for a while, and maybe next time you leave, he won't shut it all the way. Okay, we minister to those that are blind, and we have to keep that in mind. It helps for us to understand that because sometimes, like I said, their reactions are unpleasant, to say the least, and not positive at all, the way we might hope. In chapter 3 there in verse 14, he uses the same phrase, their minds are blinded, in reference to his Jewish brethren. You see that? They are blind to the excellency of the New Testament, to the identity of their Savior. At Paul's time, he said it continues to this day. Now, I'm going to liken this here a little to immature Christians, and it's not necessarily an exact fit, but will help us understand. Immature Christians that don't know the stuff that they should know and that they need to know. They haven't grown up the way they should. They could have, but they haven't. And so what's helpful when you minister to young Christians or immature Christians in this type of state is to remember that, in fact, they are children and immature. And so everything maybe needs to be simpler. And don't assume that they'll understand basic things just if you say it once. It's we always forget this. If you teach your kids, if you homeschool your kids, you know, this will pop up all the time. You're trying to get your kid to understand something, and it's You show it to him once, he doesn't get it. You show it to him two times, he still doesn't get it. And you say, well, man, I mean, didn't I just explain it to you? I mean, what's so hard about that? And the problem is because you've already learned it, but they haven't. So this is like their first exposure, and they have no experience in that area, no understanding in that area. So it's going to be a little hard. So just, if you want to minister to younger Christians, those that are not as mature as you, remember, you can see them as children in their Christian lives. And this is easy, especially if there's a big age difference, right? What comes harder then is when the physical age difference is not so much, okay? And then maybe you're talking about somebody that's less mature in the Lord than you, but they're still, 5 years in the Lord or 10 years in the Lord or something like that, and you still are in a position to minister to them because you have the maturity. But they're like perhaps almost the same age as you or not very much, and they have some maturity in the Lord. And so what is helpful to keep in mind is to categorize them as teenagers. Okay? I use this for the people I know and to help them understand. There's a sister that she's responsible for, dozen people or so, and she'll call me and she'll be all frustrated about how these younger Christians are acting, and they won't listen, and then they have a bunch of ideas that are not right, and so I explain to her. I say, just think of them as teenagers. Okay, and I start telling her what the teenagers are. What's a characteristic of a teenager? That is, they've grown up some, and so they think they've grown up all the way. And they know so much more than they ever did before, so they think they know more than you. And their powers of argumentation are more advanced, so they tend to be more exasperating if you try to have a conversation with them. It helps a lot. Next time you are trying to work with someone that is at that stage in their Christian life, and you're finding that you're butting heads with them, just remember this is a Christian in their teenage stage. Okay, so of course this was a single woman, and she was single and she didn't have any kids, so it was hard for me to explain that to her. But those of you that have experience with teenagers, and I hope this illustration is helpful. It helps me a lot because some of the people I have dealt with are, very exasperating, and yelling at me and writing me nasty emails and so on. And people that I helped bring to the Lord and help get their family squared away and help set their kids on the right path. And then but then at some point I got to deal with them about something, and then wham, okay, I don't know anything, and call me bad names and stuff like that. It's kind of like a teenager. I mean, that's not to say that teenagers would necessarily call people bad names, but you understand what I'm saying. They knew everything and even more than me, and so I just had to say, okay, maybe we'll work on it again sometime. After you settle down. These are some of the kinds that we minister, and we are servants, right? So we need to remember who we are ministering to and have an approach that's suitable. And we'll learn that approach from the Lord if you'll let him teach you. Something an able minister must do, and we find this in chapter 4 and verse 2, is that he must renounce dishonesty. He must renounce dishonesty. The first time I went through Colossians to teach the whole book, I got there to Colossians chapter 3, and I guess we could go there. We haven't actually turned any pages, so let's do that. Colossians chapter 3. And I got going in there, and I hit verse 9, and it says, "Lie not one to another, seeing that you have put off the old man with his deeds." And I'm thinking, well, yeah, they shouldn't be lying anymore. Just like, they Christians need to, verse 8, put off all these things, anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, and so on, filthy communication. They should put off lying, you know. Yeah, that used to be what they were before. That's what we were before. But now our we are dead and our life is hid in Christ. But then I notice it says, but lying one to another. That's Christians lying to each other. The Colossians are Christian. And Paul says to the Christian Colossians, lie not to one another. Christians lie to each other? Apparently enough for Paul to make mention of it and tell them to stop doing it. And so, yeah, we need to renounce dishonesty. Dishonesty in our communication with the brethren. Now, you know, that's not just people that you know in church. That might be include your spouse, of course, or your children. We should renounce the dishonesty in communication. People don't talk honestly these days. They talk to create a facade, okay? Or they talk just to talk. And what's disappointing is when Christians do the same thing, okay? We should have other motivations. So if your words and your actions aren't an honest representation of who you are, then you can't be a minister of Jesus Christ. You can't just play a part. You have to be the part. You can't pretend to care. You have to actually care. And don't lie to yourself and say that you do care when you don't care. So your conversations, they have to be, I care what you think, so I'm talking with you. Not, I'm listening because I have to, and then when you're done talking, I can say what I want to say, and then you listen to me. Or we can't muddle up our communications and serious conversations with a bunch of emotions. That's dishonest. It's just that you've made the conversation a place where you vent. And so then you just can get out your anger. That's for you, okay? You acted like you were entering into this communication for a mutually beneficial purpose, right? But no, if you just let all the emotions flow, that's not what you're doing. No, emotions are valid, but they're not as important as what's right. Okay? So our communication should be the ministration of the Spirit, not the ministration of emotion. So you might ask, well, why do I always have to minister to them? Can I get my spirit ministered to? Well, actually, it can work both ways. And if you've ever wondered about why Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 21 there, I won't turn there, he says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of the Lord. And that gets at a little bit about what I'm talking about. It's supposed to be an honest two-way street where both sides can benefit, and in fact, both sides could be ministering to each other at the same time. And it also helps us understand a little bit what Paul says back in Corinthians there in chapter 3. We didn't stop here earlier. It says, "Ye," in verse 2, "ye are our epistle written in our hearts." So the epistle is written in our hearts first. That is, first, honestly, we learned of the Lord, and in honesty and humility, we ministered to our charges. And our epistles written in our hearts and then known and read of all men. And how is it that they're known? Or how is it that the result is known, that this epistle is known? Is because our ministering was effectual. Okay? And so it produced something. It produced some manifestation of righteousness, and other people could see it and understand it. And the last thing we'll work on tonight is to understand that an able minister sees eternally. And we see that all the way down in chapter 4 and verse 18, where it says, "While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen, for the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal." Well, you say, "Preacher, it says they're not seen. The eternal things are not seen. So how are we going to see the eternal things?" Well, that's if you're only looking temporally, right? Or naturally, or carnally, then you won't see these things. But back in chapter 3, verse 12, it says, "Seeing then, we have such hope." So, don't we also see because of our hope? Even though the Lord is not here physically, chapter 3 and verse 17, are we not able to, with an open face, behold as in a glass His glory? Verse 18. Again, in chapter 4 and verse 1, Paul says, "Seeing we have this ministry," and I don't think he's just using the word as a synonym for "therefore." I think he's actually talking about seeing it, okay? Seeing that we have this ministry. We see it all. It's a ministry of eternity, for eternity, regarding eternity. And therefore, we faint not, right? Because we see it. If we never could see anything, would we not faint? But we can see it. We can see it. Has not the light shined in our hearts, and we saw it, and we know there is nothing more glorious, so we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus our Lord. Let's all strive to be able ministers of the gospel. Come on, brother. I'm finished. Thank you.